بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In accordance to our weakness, things become easier and more relaxed. At the beginning, it was a duty that if there were 10 persons as your opposition, then you could not flee the battlefield. If you ran away, then you would be counted as a criminal, an unforgivable sin. Why you ran away? Opposition was 10 times your size. Unpardonable sin, why you ran away? الآن خفف الله عنكم وعلم أن فيكم ضعفا. Then Allah Ta'ala had seen a weakness. People don't have that type of strength, that type of morale, and that type of stability what they used to have in the past. So Allah Ta'ala relaxed the whole law. Then now 1 to 10 is over. But if you have an opposition double your size, then you can't flee, can't run away. So you will see, as things become complicated and difficult, then the law of Allah Ta'ala becomes relaxed. Before, to get into the company of a pious Buzurg Sheikh, it will be difficult, right? If you go to India, now every corner you find someone, right? Before, if you had to send your children for advanced education, they must go to India, Pakistan. Now, anywhere, even part-time, you get someone to teach you. Before, even if you had to phone to Mzinto, then you had to go through the exchange, calling, are you getting through now? Then the exchange will put you through. And now you can phone right up to America and Australia without an exchange, or direct straight. So when Allah Ta'ala notices a difficulty, then He creates some type of a thing that will overcome the difficulty. This creation is Allah Ta'ala's, whether it's a phone, fax, email, whatever. It's all small little toys in the sight of Allah Ta'ala. So He put into your mind, just play with this toy now. And you think, hey, man is so intelligent. Where is your intelligence? It's not your intelligence. Allah Ta'ala put in your mind. There was one professor here from the university some times ago. So I told him that these major discoveries are all by accident. So he got shocked a little bit. Then I told him, see, the two major discoveries, one is electric and light, right? Go and find out, go and see, research the whole thing, how it happened, accident. If you're looking for something else, and this came by the side. Right? Telephone communications, also by accident. And all these inventions, they revolve around the wheel. And the wheel came from Adam al-Islam's time or Nur al-Islam's time. From the Nabi it was passed on. So we just improved on that. You look at all the inventions, they just improved on the basis, on the basic. So it's nothing of yours. We just improved on the same thing. The principle Allah Pak had shown, the concept Allah Pak had shown you, and you improved on that concept. So nothing of yours. But Allah Ta'ala has seen the weakness. When he saw the weakness, then He directed your mind towards these different things. And until you were not so weak, He allowed you to go and plow the field manually. Go and do it everything manually, right? Then He saw the weakness is creeping in, coming more and more difficult. Electricity, motorized vehicles, ships, etc. All that came now recently, not more than 1.5 centuries, right? So why Allah Pak didn't inspire you then? Because you were strong. And then now Allah Pak is showing it to you, for multiple reasons. One is now the whole world is coming to an end. Right? Number two, you're so weak. You're so weak. Before you would see people offloading the truck, you know. And 100 kilo sack was an easy thing, simple thing to just carry, hold over your shoulder and go and deposit it. It was such a simple thing. Now you say 100 kilos. You have to go to a bodybuilding gym, all that, then you'll become like 100 kilos. And then it was like natural. It was so simple. So because of the weakness, Allah Ta'ala created and directed you to this type of things. So as things become more and more complicated, Allah Ta'ala will show you more and more ways of ease. But then you have to follow procedure. And the simple way of ease is what I spoke about some weeks back. It's fana'iyat. Just give yourself, don't employ your own reasoning when it comes to the matters of Allah Ta'ala. You hold on to someone and hold firmly. You'll find the ease in that. But if you use your own reasoning, your own brains, you'll find that it becomes complicated, difficult. Oh, this is like this, this is so difficult, why is it so difficult? And in that way it's so simple and so easy. So the difficulty was brought on yourself because of two reasons. One is you didn't have the heart to submit and to surrender. You thought you were something. Right? So you brought the difficulty upon yourself. And number two, you couldn't find the right procedure. When you couldn't find the right procedure, then obviously it will become difficult for you. I was just discussing this. Someone was asking me this morning. There's so much of difference of opinion. Some ulama are saying something and someone is saying something. Then how do we go about with our lives? What do we do? Why is there so much of confusion? So I told him, see, there's two levels of differences, right? One is principles. Principles, you can't conflict in principles. You can't afford to contradict in principles. Five time namaz is a principle, you can't go against it. It's like you can't say five time namaz is a difference of opinion, five time namaz. Can you say that? You can't say. Although Egypt was trying to make it three times a day, but the whole world clamped upon Egypt. Then this year they thought of something else. Some years ago they thought about 3 years, three namazes for the day, because five namaz was too difficult. Now they thought of making the roza to standard time, 17, 18 hours instead of 19, 20 hours in those countries where they have it. So they were trying to get that also regulated, but the whole world opposed them. Right? So that won't work. Principle matters and core issues, we will not listen to anybody. That's principle matters. Someone talks about wine, or swine, we'll say, as a principal matter, we can't compromise on that. But then there will be a second level, a secondary level of secondary issues, where the Sharia allows and provides for difference of opinion. It accommodates difference of opinion. Now, that difference of opinion, will we accept it or will we reject it? So the simple procedure for difference of opinion is, we will see what is the standard in the place that we are living, provided it is in conformity with the Sunnah. We will see the standard in our area, provided it is in conformity with the Sunnah. Right? Like for example, in our towns, we will not allow the janazah namaz to be performed in the masjid. We've got a separate area for the janazah namaz. Don't we have it? And in our towns, you'll also see that we have the Asr namaz slightly later. They call it mislain, right? And you will see in Shafi areas that the Asr namaz is raised like the Haram Sharif time, much earlier, right? About 1.5 hour difference sometimes. 1.5 hour to 2 hour difference. So in our towns, because we are following a certain standard, that also is in conformity with the Sunnah, anybody introduces something else, we say, no, but keep it away. We respect that, but we are following the one interpretation. That interpretation conforms to the Sunnah. We don't need to confuse ourselves. So you keep that in your area. If we come to your area, we will conform to that. We will also join the janazah namaz inside the Haram Sharif, inside the masjid. Don't we do that? We will do that. We will also perform the Asr namaz with you in your time. But when you come here, then you will conform to always. Now, is there any confusion in that? No confusion in that. The Haram Sharif Imam Sahib will come here, we'll make him our Imam for the Isha Namaz, but we will tell him we only read 2 rakats in place of 4 rakats. And the other 2 we'll read ourselves, because he's a Musafir. Although for them, although for Shafis and Hanbalis, there are a further relaxation in that Musafir Namaz, they can read all 4 rakats. But for us it is unacceptable. So because our people are used to one method, one style, we will ask them to conform to our method. So that there is no confusion in the rank and the file of our community, our people. There is no confusion. One style was carrying on, the style is in conformity with the Sunnah, you move along with it. Now the problem comes where we have got a situation by us that is conforming with the Sunnah, and someone wants to do and practice a contradictory view. That may also be in conformity with the Sunnah, but it is not in keeping with the style and the standard that is in vogue here. That's going to create a problem, obviously. Say, where this person came up? Now I say that that must not be accommodated. Why it must not be accommodated? Because it creates confusion in the mind of the public. He can't understand the nitty-gritties. He can't understand the finer reasoning. He can't understand it. He is used to a certain thing, photography is haram, finish. Now you give a finer explanation, now it's not appealing to him, he can't understand it. When you can't understand it, that means you are forcing your way. So you're going to create a conflict. So the conflict was by that person who's bringing about this new view. If it just went in accordance to the style that was in vogue, then there wouldn't have been a conflict. But you brought this, now you created a conflict. So you ask yourself, who brought the conflict? So the conflict is both by the public as well as those people that brought about the conflict. They both need to understand, alright, what is the thing that is in vogue here? They must conform to that, provided that is in accordance with the Sunnah. It is not out of line of the Sunnah. Hazrat Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, he thought of reconstructing the Baytullah. According to Bukhari Sharif, he thought of reconstructing the Baytullah according to the design of Ibrahim alayhi salam. Because the original design of Ibrahim alayhi salam was that the floor of the Kaaba Sharif was ground level. Right? Number 2, there were 2 entrances in the opposite directions. Number 3, the Hatim was connected to the Kaaba Sharif. These were the 3 things. When the Quraysh, pre-Islam, when they reconstructed the Baytullah, this is the changes that they made. They made 1 entrance. They brought it, they elevated the entrance about 2 meters from the ground. And number 3, they excluded the Hatim from the Kaaba Sharif. So Rasulullah ﷺ understood that the original design of Ibrahim al-Islam was quite different to this. But if he brought it back to the original design, it will create confusion in the rank and the file of the new Muslims here. People have accepted Islam just now. Now they will say, what type of a Nabi, na'uzubillah, is this? Just now he started inviting us towards Islam, and now he is breaking down and demolishing the Kaaba Sharif. So it will result in a wholesale confusion in the minds of the people. Though to reconstruct it in the original design will be mustahab. Won't you say that it is mustahab? It was the original design. So to maintain that original design was mustahab. Though it was not an obligation, but it will result in creating a confusion in the minds of the unwary. They don't understand this. So just leave that, don't interfere with that. Imam Malik rahmatullah alayh was approached by Harun al-Rashid. Harun al-Rashid was his contemporary, and he held Imam Malik rahmatullah in very high regard. Told him, see, your book is a masterpiece, Muwatta, it's a masterpiece, and I have resolved that your book must be standard right throughout all Islamic lands. Now I stop for a moment and I ask a lot of our contemporaries in this age and time, if someone would say, you know, I prepare a kitab, and your kitab is going to be the standard of the whole world, you see what level of acceptance I got. Now you need to compare your response to the response of Imam Malik rahmatullah alayh, because he's a senior. He's a forerunner, right? He understood Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam more than you understood him. Like Abu Hanifa rahmatullah understood Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam more than you understand. Imam Malik also understood Nabi some more than you understood. Right? That is why we follow them. Not because he's a Nabi, but because his understanding of Allah Ta'ala and his Nabi was greater. They understood him. So what we are following is his understanding and the interpretation that he has made of the hadith. That's what we are following. We're not following Imam Malik. We're not following Abu Hanifa rahmatullah alayh. We're following his understanding. Because his understanding was from the understanding of the Sahaba ikram. He met Abu the Sahaba. So he got it directly from them. He saw the context. He saw the siyak and the sibak. He saw it exactly how it was in vogue at that time. And he passed it on. After codifying it and after recording it, he passed it on to us. So Imam Malik rahmatullah alayhi, when this proposition was put forth before him, he blatantly rejected it. Blatantly, outright rejection. And he says, you see, the Sahaba ikram had gone in all different directions. One had gone to the east, one to the west, one to one country, one to the other country. And whatever they had taken from Hazrat Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Right. One took the view, in Kufa they took the view that you will only raise your hands once in namaz. Right. That's the view that was in vogue in Kufa, in Iraq. Once in namaz, you will raise your hands. Namaz, right. They took that view. Abdullah ibn Mas'ud and 1500 Sahaba kiram joined him, and that was their practice. Then there was another Sahabi, Abdullah ibn Zubayr radiyallahu anhu, grandson of Abu Bakr Siddiq radiyallahu anhu, and so much of virtue to his record. The first Muslim to be born in Medina Munawwara. But his practice was to raise the hand at the time of going for ruku, at the time of getting up from ruku. That was his practice. So, those people that were living in Makkah Mukarramah, they practiced what they had seen Abdullah ibn Zubayr doing. And Abdullah ibn Zubayr saw Nabi sallallahu alaihi wasallam doing this. And those living in Kufa, they practiced what Abdullah ibn Mas'ud did. And Abdullah ibn Mas'ud saw what Nabi sallallahu alaihi wasallam was doing. So Nabi sallallahu had this practice and had that practice. So these people took on that, and these people took on this practice. So this was a general trend in Medina. This was the norm in Makkah. This was the trend in Kufa. So Imam Malik rahmatullah says, whichever Sahaba has taken whatever version from Nabi sallallahu alaihi wasallam, he's taken the truth, right? And whatever he's preserved has to be respected and honored. Imam Malik is far, far below the Sahaba kiram. Nobody can be at the level of the Sahaba kiram. Nobody. So they are far higher. So when they have taken different versions, let those versions carry on. We don't come and mix up things. They have taken, they were Sahaba, they had seen Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam directly. And in spite of that, they had taken these variances, they had taken, and they had moved on to their own areas, so just let it carry on in that way. Now we're going to force them, that means we are forcing them against what the Sahaba Ikram had practiced, against what they learned from Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. So can we demand an authority above the authority of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam? Can we do that? We can't. Let it carry on. So he vehemently stopped that. No, don't do this. Just let it carry on. Continue. Then, when the discussion of the reconstruction of the Baytullah came in, Imam Malik again stopped Harun al-Rashid. Harun al-Rashid said, no, I want to reconstruct it. Original design. Nabi sallallahu alaihi wasallam mansha. This was his desire. Like I would say, our Kabir wanted it. Imam Malik rahmatullah said, no, don't do it. Because you're going to do this, this Kaaba Sharif will become a toy for all the rulers and the monarchs that will come here. He will want to have his mark there. Hey, who did the Kaaba Sharif? So-and-so king. King so-and-so, king so-and-so, king and so-and-so. He did the Kaaba Sharif. So that will be a toy for all the kings and the monarchs that are going to come afterwards. So just leave it as it will. Don't interfere with these things. So this is the one precedent that we find in the past. Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, and where this could have resulted in a confusion, some avoided the confusion. Though practicing it will be amounting to practicing a mustahab. And leaving it will amount to leaving out a mustahab. But Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam has seen this, okay, this was in vogue, now leave it like this now. Now don't create any confusion in that. See, practicing it is practicing a mustahab. Leaving it out is leaving out a mustahab. But the greater thing is what? The greater thing is the unity of the ummah. That You don't do anything that will create a confusion in the ranks of the ummah. Because everybody wants to do something. You know, I must leave my mark here. My trade, I must leave it here. That's the stand that we have today, unfortunately. I want to do something that, you know, I leave my mark on this. Everybody must think about me, must talk about me. Wherever I go, wherever they see this, then they must think about me. It must be a reflection to my excellence. This is what he wants. Unfortunately, ab kya kahe bhai? What can we say? If we talk about the right, then you brand it as orthodox, right? You brand it as someone old-fashioned, and you said, "No, you're coming out too aggressive. You're coming out too hard. You talk about the right, right?" And if you remain silent, then they say you're cool, you're very relaxed, you're a very balanced person. But in that coolness, what happens? For a certain period, you would despise the wrong within your mind. Right? Within your mind, within your heart, you would despise the wrong. Right? There's music playing somewhere in a Muslim culture, in a Muslim country, in a Muslim place. You'll find some music playing. You say, it can't be so hard now. So you become relaxed, right? At the first level. Then you see, now, there is interaction between men and women. So they also say, no, you have to be relaxed. You can't be too hard. You can't be too aggressive. So now you're a very balanced person. Though within your heart you despised it, within your mind you disliked it. But if you're going to speak about it, then you're going to come out as an aggressive person. You're going to come out as an orthodox. You're going to come out as a very rude person, impolite person, as a person that is impatient, intolerable, if you speak about it. You don't talk about it, you're cool and relaxed. But within the process, within your heart, perhaps you are despising it, but you're keeping quiet. So at the first level, you will despise. At the second level, you will become complacent. Then you'll say, all right, the rest of the crowd is doing it. Why must I act as holier than thou? So you accept the wrong norm as the norm. Then when you accept the wrong norm, as the given norm, then what happens? Then at that level, what happens is you also begin to support what's going on. Right? And not only do you support what's going on, your Islam becomes selective. Right? Right? Certain things you say, no, it's not, I don't ever entertain this, I won't negotiate this. Your Islam becomes selective. Right? You won't negotiate it at all, right? You say, for example, no, we have to perform our namaz on time. So that you are very strong about. But then the casual approach towards women, say, no, you can't be so orthodox in that respect. So do you see now how you going over the line? How are you cutting the line? In one thing you are very hard and firm, but the other thing you are totally relaxed. You're saying you must come and perform your namaz with jamaat. Jummah namaz mustn't leave out. Because you leave out Jummah namaz, then Allah will pull a seal in your heart. Right? You were there. You were good in that respect. But now you know I got a running business. And when it's a running business, then I can't stop this business. Then let me put my woman law in the shop there, whilst I go for my namaz. Or I need to go for some deeni activity. Right? That my business needs to carry on also. Now I can't manage it now. How can I do the both? I can't manage it. So I will go and do the deeni activity and she will stay in the shop. So your Islam is not Islam. Your Islam is not Islam. It is a selective version. It is what you made of Islam. That distorted version. You concocted a version for yourself and then you presented it. So that is not the Islam. Allah Pak is showing the criteria. Bala man aslama wajhahu lillah. That you surrender unquestioning, unselective, and you surrender entirely. Bala man aslama. So the criteria for acceptance is total submission. Not selective submission. That is not submission. Is that submission? The boss tells you, you must come at 8 o'clock, you must leave at 4 o'clock. So you come at 12 o'clock and you leave at 4 o'clock. Say, no, one thing I will listen to you, 4 o'clock I will leave, but I'll come at 12 o'clock. Is that acceptable? So for your principles, you're so hard and fast, oh, you must listen to me, otherwise I will penalize you. And the standard that is created by Allah Ta'ala, they say, you know, I can negotiate it, I can work around it. Is that right? Does it make sense? So, no, no. You told me to come 8 o'clock and 4 o'clock. I don't want to be too aggressive now. Don't become too orthodox now. Why are you so aggressive and orthodox? I'll come at 12 o'clock and I'll lock up at 4 o'clock. At least I'm listening to you halfway meeting up somewhere. Is that acceptable? No. So Allah was saying, no, no, I don't want this selective Islam. You come my way, come full my way. Then don't have the selective attitude. Where it works with you, then you are accepting. Where it doesn't work with you, then you're rejecting. See? So that's not the Islam that I want. I want total Islam. After all, why did Allah give you the name Islam on Muslim? Why did He give you? That this was the distinguishing quality in yourself. So otherwise Allah could have given you a different name. If you have the selective attitude and approach, then Allah would have given you a different name. Like they got the name of Nasara or Yahud, right? They were all also the Muslims of that time. But they didn't get the title, they didn't get the honor of being Muslims. You got the honor of being Muslims, that you unquestionably, unconditional, and you just submit and just surrender. No selection of Islam. So the version that we have got is a selective Islam. Now you got, in an institute you got some portrait of a Hindu leader, you got a portrait there, and Islam also, you got a Hindu leader, Gandhi, and you got his portrait there. But he's performing 5-time namaz also. And we got a grand opening of a Jamaat Khana. MashaAllah, from all over the world you got people there. So on the one side you're doing total haram. Then on the other end, then everything is Islam. Now you got Islam, this institute is Islamic. On one side, you say we are Islam, whole, we are complete Islam. And then we have a little bit of a casual approach to women. The woman is on the stage and the woman is addressing, young girls are addressing a mixed crowd of men and women. So where's the Islam now? Now that audience is asking, now where's the true Islam now? One side we say we hear of Islam here, here there's a mixed gathering. So where's the true Islam? Now isn't the burden of this upon the heads of the leaders? Whether they're ulama or they're not ulama, I ask you, who's going to bear the brunt of this? Creating this confused version of Islam, concocted and distorted version of Islam, who's going to bear the brunt of it? Is it going to be borne by the leaders or not? Because they have concocted it, they have distorted it, they have mixed it up. The mass, they don't understand it. And they feel confused for some time, but then with the passage of time they become complacent. When they became complacent, this complacency, where did it settle? Where did it come from? It came from the top. So you see, if you become too strict, then you're orthodox. You become old-fashioned. You're aggressive. And you become a little bit, you relaxed. Then you say you're cool. You're moving with the times. So then what you must do? Are you going to allow your Islam to be influenced by public decision and public opinion? I ask you, are you going to allow your Islam to be influenced by public opinion? Public says this, then let's go this. Like how you have voting, 90 people said this, 10 people said let's go with that, carry on, let's move on. But is that going to be the end of your Islam? No, that's not going to be the end of Islam. So what I was explaining here is there are two levels. There's two levels. The one level is those things that are compulsory, they are not negotiable at all. Those things that are not negotiable, we just leave it. We don't interfere with that. Then you get a second level where there is a room for difference of opinion. And there is something in vogue already that we don't interfere with that. That we just leave it. We don't interfere with that. When we interfere with that, then we're creating a whole confusion. The whole community is getting capsized. All things going upside down. Why we created some new type, something new we have created, and people are coming to terms with it. When they haven't come to terms with it, you're creating a great confusion. And I say that there is a precedent in the hadith for that. I showed you the Baytullah, and Rasulullah, he just refused to reconstruct the Baytullah. Why? You ask yourself, why did he refuse? Then again, you come into the time of Hazrat Usman al-Ghani radiallahu anhu. Islam is spread now far and wide, right to Azerbaijan and Russia and all these places here. Islam is spread so far. So everybody that has gone in different directions, they have taken the Islam that they have learned. Now in Azerbaijan, there were mixed crowds that had settled there. Someone is reading the Quran Sharif in one dialect, in Warsh. Someone is reading in Nafi. Someone is reading some other dialect. Now this person is telling that person, you are kafir. You read the Quran Sharif wrong. And that person says, you are a fasik. You are reading the Quran Sharif wrong. Now, this whole complaint is brought to Usman al-Ghani radiallahu anhu in Medina Munawara, that you better go and check out this ummah before they go out of bounds just now. You go and check them up, see what's going on. Usman al-Ghani radiallahu anhu had made a survey, what's going on? He wanted to know what's going on. He's the Amir al-Mu'mineen, and this whole confusion is going on in his time. That this person is calling that person kafir, that person calling him fasik, fajir, for reading the Quran Sharif differently from what he is reading it. So Usman al-Ghani radiallahu anhu was a qari, obviously, and he's a jami'ul Quran, so he understood what was going on. So he had a mashwara, and he decided after that. What he decided, that all the present copies of the Quran Sharif, all must be put away, burnt, put away. And he made one script of the Quran Sharif, and he passed it on to all the different continents of Islam. Different continents. Whether it was Saudi Arabia, whether it was Turkey, whether it was Russia, wherever. But it says, all will read from this one single script. Whereas there was a relaxation. There was a concession given to read it in the different dialects. Right? And to write it also in the different dialects. So he says, you may read it in the different dialect, but you will write it in just one dialect. You may read it in different dialects, but the written copy of the Quran Sharif will be in just one. And that they will conform with the standard that I have started off. So Rasulullah had given the permission. Look at it, analyze the whole situation. He had given the permission. Right? And then Usman al-Ghani, when it comes to his time, he has withdrawn this permission. Right? And it is done with the consultation of all the Sahaba-i-Kiram that were living at that time. And nobody objected. So there was consensus that the Quran Sharif must be like this now. Now from now, it will be like this. Right. So why did Usman al-Ghani radiallahu ta'ala propose this idea? You ask yourself, why did he propose this idea? Whereas there was the concession for that. And that concession was approved by Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. And Nabi Sallallahu got the approval from above. From Allah Ta'ala, he got the concession. Usman al-Ghani radiallahu ta'ala, he stops it. So why did he go and stop the whole thing? You ask yourself, why did he stop the whole thing? Because this was resulting in a confusion in the ranks and the file of the Ummah. Now the Ummah doesn't know whether we go this way, we go that way. We're going this way, so he's calling us a fasik. We're going that way, he's calling us a fajir. That person is calling us a kafir. Now what do we do? See? So therefore I say, there are two levels. And the two levels have to be understood. The one level is at the level of the principle, the base. We can't change the base. The second level is a secondary issue. The secondary issue, in the secondary matters, we will see what is in vogue in that area. And we will go with that which is in vogue. Like I said, in our towns, we don't read the janaza namaz inside the masjid. We read outside the masjid. Don't we have it? Now, if someone is going to force it, no, in the Haram Sharif, I went and did my namaz in the Haram Sharif. And in Medina Munawara, where Rasulullah is resting. And they were reading the janaza namaz in the masjid, so can't we do that here as well? By with due respect to them, they will do it there and we will do it here. They have got reasoning and we have got reasoning as well. We will respect them. When we are there, we will do what they are doing there. And when they are here, they will do what we are doing here. So now, is there any confusion now? So where did the confusion come about? The confusion came about at this point. Telling a little bit bluntly, but where did the confusion come about? The confusion came about at this point that we want to see entertainment in Islam. We have made our religion entertainment, excitement, novelty. So wherever there is going to be excitement, entertainment, then that will be our Islam. We have a fundraising show, So mashallah, everybody's doing a fundraising show. Whether it's women, men, everybody is sitting and eating together. It's alright, can carry on. So long as we're getting some funds. In the process of the funds, we're getting some fun also. So that's alright. But what is all this? It's all excitement, entertainment. اتخذوا دينكم هزوا ولعبا. They have made their deen a thing of sports, entertainment, excitement. Right? Listening to an old person, bayan, etc., in an old-fashioned way, is a little bit too outdated. But coming onto the television, isn't that exciting? With a little bit of show, a little bit of acting and all that, well-dressed and well-combed, etc., well-groomed, and is appearing there. Now, isn't that exciting and appealing? So, again, we made our deen a thing of excitement and a thing of entertainment. Giving a small little talk, simple little talk, understanding Islam, talimul haq, simple way. No, that's too, sounds too old-fashioned. That sounds too old-fashioned, right? Let's go a little bit modern way. So what we should do now? Now, we have a question and session on the television. You see this, Muta is coming in. See the brilliant genius and how he's giving the answers. See the impression on the face and all that. What an intelligent person he is. You see that? So where your deen is coming, your deen is going on the direction of entertainment, excitement, the novelty. This is what you want in your deen. What you wanted, you got that. So you don't blame only those people that are coming up. You blame yourself also. You want. And those people, they are seeing what is the clientele like. Right? The clientele want this type of a fridge. They want that type of a car. So the manufacturers will make that. Right? They see what they want, what the market wants. What are they doing? They are discovering, they are trying to see what the market wants. When they see what you want, they will make it. And they'll make it available for you. So do you blame them only? You blame them and you blame yourself as well. You wanted that, so they made that. See? So, like you have Anbiya and righteous person, one supporting and assisting and cooperating with the other, then you have the Shayateen as well. زُخْرُفَ الْقَوْلِ غُرُورًا وَسَلْ آيَةً يُوحِي بَعْضٌ إِلَى بَعْضٍ زُخْرُفَ الْقَوْلِ غُرُورًا وَسَلْ آيَةً before that. So the Shayateens also, they cooperate. They cooperate, they assist. They aid each other with flowery talks, exciting talks. The actual words, زُخْرُفَ الْقَوْلِ, flowery talks. So that flowery talks then begin to excite the person. So that person, what is he left with? He feels my deen is entertainment and excitement. So instead of listening and reading the Talimul Haq or Besti Zewar or Fazail Kitabs, that is too, I rather listen to some nasheed, listen to some songs. So that song became his deen. And now in the song he's jiving, he's going high, he's tearing also the big, see now I got deen. So what his deen became? A little bit of excitement. A play of emotions, he's crying a little bit, some tears are coming out, he's talking about that person that is singing, he's talking some grandfather's story also. Mary Ma, and how he's making his actions and all that, now you hear all these things here, and with the style and all that, and you start also crying, I've done something for my deen, I cried. What contribution to your deen? Tell me what contribution to your deen? No contribution. So your deen, what has become your deen? Just emotions, feelings, excitement, entertainment, that's the end of your deen. These people also did the same thing. If you look at Christianity, etc., this is what they did as well. That was the end of their religion. Where it flopped completely, where it failed, they saw now the audience, they felt that talk was too outdated, etc. Now let's introduce some music. They brought some music. Then they brought professional musicians. Then they said, no, this is also getting outdated. Then they brought some wine as well. They made that wine holy, must have the holy wine. Like you drank of the blood of Isa alayhi salam. You drink Isa alayhi salam's blood, you think you're doing a holy thing. I mean, you stabbed him and you drink his blood. So he's a holy thing. Now you didn't stop there. Then at the third level, you got the woman also to join in the whole congregation. And at the fourth level, you made her also the priest. So now the audience, what are they expected to do? To marvel at the priest or to marvel at her talk? Now they are also in a state of confusion, you see. See the whole confusion where it comes from. They also were a deen of truth, which deviated. There were also a deen of truth which deviated. But that deviation brought them at that level where they became more and more relaxed, more and more complacent. One wrong, and the second wrong, and the third wrong, and everything went wrong after this. There isn't a thing that is right. Show me one thing that is right. Is the iman right? The iman is corrupted. The aqidah is corrupt. Their practice is corrupt. And they're so corrupt that every religion, Adam al-Islam, till now, every Nabi had a sajda in his prayer. And they calculated, and they removed the sajda out of the prayer. Imagine now, they had, every religion had sajda in the prayer, namaz they had. And it was a calculated effort to remove the sajda out of the prayer completely, entirely. But you see this effort of distortion, selective Islam, where it brought them, from where to where. From which point to which point. It brings the person to that point where that religion becomes a commercialized venture. Where the priest and the papa says, just see me right and you will be right. You see me right. He becomes now the idol. So you have to give him the one-tenth, the tithe you have to give him, and everything is marked after that. Everything is right after that. So you see from which point it came and to which point it's ended. So your religion also comes from that point. When it takes a decline at this point. But then I say, it's not just the leader that is a criminal. The public is also a criminal. You wanted that and they packaged it for you. So you will also send people to the madrasas, etc. You think, you know, why madrasas are producing such people? But it's what you sending to the madrasa. The madrasa is like a hatchery. See? The madrasa is like a hatchery. If that egg was a little bit deformed, the chicken that's going to be hatching is also going to be deformed. And it's a perfect egg that you are sending, then it's going to come out perfect as well. The madrasa will try whatever they can try, but that's the point that they can reach up to. Now you wanting to know why the madrasa is not producing right. But you're not asking why I'm not sending the right thing to the madrasa. You send the right stuff, you will get the right stuff, you will get the right return. But you're sending the wrong now. Now what do you expect? As the Mawlana Thamis Sahib says, one policeman had to go to one inn, you know, in the old days in India, to go to inn. So he wanted his meals. So in those days they had a Bhatiyaran, old lady now, she is preparing rotis. Rotis and his meals now, she is preparing it. She's got a son besides her and she's preparing some meals. In the process of preparing the meals, she broke wind. Now she can't hold her embarrassment, so she slapped the child, you know. Hey, what's wrong? What's up with you? Don't have the respect for this policeman here. The policeman is seeing all the show, what's going on. He saw the drama exactly firsthand. So what he did now, he understood, and now deliberately he broke wind, and he gave the child one slap. He said, see, whoever does the wrong, but you are the culprit. Whoever does the wrong, but you are the victim. So now that's what happens to us. And whoever does the wrong, but the ulama are the culprit. We don't want to share the blame. I don't say they are totally innocent, but do we also share some portion of the blame? We're sending this type of things, this type of elements. This is the result we are getting. So do we also take some of the blame, or we push all the blame onto the one person, one single person, lump him with all the blame? We also took the blame. The madrasa is functioning. Through the public it's functioning. So what you are investing there, this is what you are getting. So is it right for you, is it fair that you lump all the blame onto one single person? Is that the right thing? So, what is the way out? We're talking about all these stories, but then what's the way out? Although there was various requests made in the course of the week, you know, so many people asked me, what about the third point? Right? Now my mind is going in a different tangent. I can't help it, right? Otherwise I'll force myself to talk on a thing that my heart is not going in that direction. Inshallah, one day that my heart will come on that direction, I'll speak that by the grace of Allah Ta'ala. But the question is now, what is the way out? So a few days ago, I was telling them at home, I was telling the ladies. The ladies are sitting there and everybody brings news. Oh, this is what happened in America, this is what happened here, this is what happened. So I told them, see, The hadith teaches us something else. What the hadith teaches us, وَلْيَسَعَكَ بَيْتُكَ. Let your house be sufficient for you. Now, I asked those ladies at home, okay, if you are sitting at home, right, you are sitting at home, and you know what's going on, you know all what's going around the world, what's happening here, what's happening there, right? I ask you, are you complying with the theme of the hadith? Or are you defeating the very theme of the hadith? You're sitting at home, but you know what's going on here, what's going on there, what's happening here. You know all that news is being fed to you. So are you in conformity with the theme of the hadith? Then you're not in conformity with the theme of the hadith, because you are there, you are hearing it, right? One way of getting the news is looking at the television, right? Or the radio, you know, everywhere. Everything was going on. So you're at home, but you're everywhere. You're in a dance hall as well, you're in a club, you're in a bar, you're in a fighting scene, you're in a love problem, triangle, you are there as well, everywhere you are. So you're defeating the theme of the hadith. So then what is the theme of the hadith? What is the lesson of the objective of the hadith? وَلْيَسَعَكَ بَيْتُ. You know, that's the problem in this day, that we are reading a lot, but how much do we digest? What we ask ourselves is, how much do we digest? We're reading so much, yes, so much. How much do we digest? The theme of the hadith is, in my understanding, Allah Ta'ala knows best, that you keep to yourself now, right? You just keep to yourself, because the wave of the fitna is such that you will not be able to stand the wave of the fitna. So when you can't stand the waves of the fitna, then you remain to yourself. Because you can't stand it. It's too much. Sometimes it's a difference of opinion. Sometimes it is woman not dressing correctly. Sometimes it is music. Sometimes it's a problem in the mall. Sometimes in the school. Sometimes in the university. Sometimes every corner, every turn, and you're getting listening to some problem. So when there's so much of problem, then the other hadith is telling you, live in your shell. In our simple words, live within your shell. So when you're going to be living within your shell, then what is the theme of this hadith? The theme of the hadith will be then, you don't know what's going on. In other words, you're not paying attention to any of the side issues. What's happening here, what's happening there, who's fighting there, and who's making ghibat here, and who's gossiping that side, and what's happening to America, what's happening to Japan, you're not worried about the side issues. You just got the blinkers on, you're going to the masjid, doing your work, coming back. Going to your business and coming back. What's going on with the rest of the world, you don't know. Because if you're too interested in what's going on in the world, then there'll be three problems within yourself. Either you'll become complacent of yourself. Hey, I'm still better than those people. They are drugging and all that. They are womanizing. I'm not doing that. So you become complacent of yourself. You will not strive like you need to strive. Because you became complacent. You heard so much. And you became complacent of yourself. And when you didn't know much what's going on, then what are you going to do? Hey, I'm still so backwards, man. I'm reading this kitab reading here, this buzrug here, here 1,000 rakats one day. There's a Rabia Basri, a woman, and she put me away. I ask you, any men here that wants to challenge this, there's a Rabia Basri, one day in your life, try and read 1,000 rakats. Just one day. Forget the whole year, whole life. Whole life is reading 1,000 rakats. You, besides, I mean, reading the Quran, her meals, her sleeping, her physical needs, etc., everything she's fulfilling, and with all that 1,000 rakats she's doing, right? Anybody who's take on the challenge, 1,000 rakats a day. So you'll think, hey, I'm so backwards, man. So backwards I am. Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal, rahmatullah alayhi, he learned about 1,000,000 hadith. He was an imam in fiqh, right? His standard was 300 rakats a day. How much? So many millions of students he's got, he's attending to them, this type of work, the whole ummah's fikr is on his head, and he's doing 300 rakats a day. After he was flogged like an animal, right, then he lost his strength, and his namaz went to about 150 to 200 rakats a day, every day without fail. Or I leave around 1,000 rakats, try 300 rakats. Can you manage it? So then, when you think in that light, say, hey, I'm too backwards. And when you're listening to too many stories, then you become either complacent. Number two, you begin to despise others. Oh, that alim is doing this, this one is doing that, and that one is doing that. So the only good person in the world is yourself and a few individuals that you know of. That's the only good person. Everybody else, you will look down upon. So is that the good thing, that you look down and despise everybody else? So you'll think, hey, you know, hey, these people here, they are better people. If you're not concerned about them too much, not consumed, so much. Hey, this person is going Jamaat 6 months in the year, 4 months every year is going. Hey, what he's doing and what I did. Hey, this person here, so many people accepted Islam at his hands. And so many people became Hafiz at his hands. MashaAllah, hey, I'm so backwards, man. I need to do something for my life also. So now you will think in a different way. Before you were listening to too much of news, too much of information, so you are with the people. Though you are within your home, you're not moving anywhere. But you are with the people, you are all around. Now you left out all those side issues and you're more concerned about yourself. The third problem will be, then you will notice the beast within yourself. It's a very hard word, but you will notice the beast within yourself. I was just explaining to the children what is meant by the beast within yourself. Small children. So I told them, see, if you behave in an unruly manner, right, you're coming to the masjid, jumping, running and all that, right, do you see a monkey or do you see a dog? If it comes here, right, will it say now, you know, it's a house of Allah Ta'ala, I need to respect it, I can't dirty the place, I can't run around, I can't jump and all that, will it have that type of thought? Or it will jump, it will run, the monkey comes in here, what will it do? It will jump, it will run. So if you're doing the same thing, right, if you're doing the same thing, I'm telling the children here, then what will we say? That you're behaving like a monkey, right? So if someone has to say you, that there's a monkey within you, but you've just got a skin of a human being, is he wrong in saying that? Within you, there's a monkey, you just got a costume of a human being. So if they do call you a monkey, then must you feel offended? Because you're behaving like that. You're behaving like that. So if they call you a monkey, then should you feel offended? Because you're behaving like that. Then in support of that, I told him, see, some years back, one person is an inspector of schools, big person. Right? He came in here for some work. So he says, I'm feeling very disgusted. You know, I came into your institute, I'm a Muslim, and not a single child greeted me with Assalamu Alaikum. So I told him, I asked for an apology on their behalf that they didn't greet you with Assalamu Alaikum. But I said, Chacha, you know, you came in, you come in with a topi. So I didn't come with a topi. So I asked the Chacha, he's an inspector, so he can think well. So I asked the Chacha that if you went to a Hindu function, right, in the style that you came in here, you haven't got a beard, and you don't have a topi, and if all those Hindus called you, they said you namaste, and they said, welcome, O Hindu, to our function, right? Should you feel offended for that? Must you feel offended for that? You mustn't feel offended because you dressed up like that. You didn't have a topi, you didn't have anything to identify yourself as a Muslim. So if they addressed you in that way, you mustn't feel offended. Right? Now those boys that didn't greet you, they would feel that if we greeted you with Assalamu Alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, right? Then perhaps you may be a Hindu and they are going to offend you. So they say, rather we just keep away from the man, we don't greet him. Don't greet him this way, don't greet him that way. You greet him either way, he's going to get offended perhaps. So we don't know whether he's a Muslim or he's a Hindu now. So within their hearts they were saying, oh, Hindu came into the madrasa, so we should just keep away, we can't greet him. Is it wrong of these children? It's not wrong. So within their hearts they were saying, you're a Hindu. One will say openly and one will say very conceived, very discreetly that you're a Hindu. So you don't deserve the greeting of Assalamu Alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. So one simple procedure that was coming to my mind today, how do we reform ourselves and correct ourselves? Right? Someone is watching porn, right? Then you need to ask yourself, who behaves in this way? The one that behaves in this way, I'm sorry to say the word, but it's a swine that behaves in this way. Because you'll find when they are intimate with their partners, right? Then one will be busy and there'll be a whole queue. One dozen will be queuing up to take its turn. And they're getting excited what's happening here. They're getting excited with this and they're queuing up. My turn now. Next one's turn. Third one's turn. So I ask you, is there any difference? So now you think to yourself, hey, what am I really now? I got a costume of a human being, but reality, what am I? In reality, what am I? Because that's exactly the pig behavior. That one is busy and the whole group that is queued up and waiting for his turn, and they're getting excited with what's going on here. They're getting excited. So you ask yourself now at that point in time, what am I? What am I supposed to be called? Because there is no difference between my behavior and pig behavior. Absolutely no behavior, no change, no difference. But there is no difference if someone calls me a pig, should I feel offended? I can't feel offended. I'm wrong if I feel offended. By the same token, if I'm a person now, that I'm snapping all the time, flipping, shouting, swearing everybody all the time, right? Then I must call myself a dog, an animal, right? You see, anybody comes, it's barking. It's aggressive, it's a charge. It's barking, shouting. So if someone calls me a bulldog or an Alsatian, what a beautiful Alsatian you are, you know, then I mustn't feel hurt about it. Because exactly the behavior is the same. It's just that you are human, and that is not human. But otherwise the behavior is exactly the same. You are charging everybody, you are shouting at everybody, you are aggressive at everybody. You are doing the same thing what they are doing. So you can't call yourself something different. You're exactly the same. It's just that Allah Pak has covered you, put you into a human skin. Otherwise you're exactly portraying the behavior of an animal. So if they call you a dog, so don't feel offended afterwards. Now that's a good way to reform yourself. You come here for what? For correction. When we come for correction, then we need to understand our weak points. When we see our weak points, we say, hey, if I'm doing this, then I'm an animal. When I'm an animal now, I need to accept that I'm an animal. Because my father also accepted when he was shown that it was his mistake. So he accepted straight away. I don't want to be out of the progeny of Adam a.s. I want to be a member of his family. So really, I need to accept my mistake. One person came up to one sheikh and he says, you know what? I've come for my Islah, for my reformation. So this end of the day, he put his head down. The sheikh asked, what happened? No, nothing. Sheikh, he's got some sight and vision. It's not to say exactly what happened. No, I'm feeling too embarrassed. Say it, whatever. But it'll be embarrassing to you. The murid, the student that has come, he says, no, it'll be embarrassing to you if I say what I need to say. Say, I see your face like the face of a swine. He said, no, don't worry. He put him into one training, make some tasbihat, zikr, etc. After a month or something, he put him into the training. When they put them on the training, then there's no relaxation. You must go by it exactly, 100%. Now we think to ourselves that, why can't these things happen to us? But ask you, how many of us are like that if the sheikh says, do this, and for 2 months you can dedicate yourself like that? There's nobody that's prepared to do that. So we don't ask for things that we can't conform. So after 2 months or something, and he asks him, how do you see now? He says, now I see you like a dog. All right, now you need a little bit more training. After another 2 months, now you look like a cat. After about a year, now I see your face is like the 14th moon. Now I see it even more brilliant than the sun. So the sheikh tells him, really it was your own face that you were seeing in me. Al-mu'minu mir'atu li'akhi. The hadith says, a Muslim is a mirror for his brother. So you saw your reflection in me. You saw your reflection in me. The first time you saw, it was me that you seen. It was yourself that you had seen, but in my mirror you had seen. And this is where you were, and this is where you have come to now. You see where you were, and where you came to now. So really, we need to ask ourselves constantly, regularly, we need to ask ourselves, that what behavior am I portraying? Am I always behaving aggressive, fighting, snapping, shouting, and bullying people down? Then really I'm supposed to be called a dog, right? And if I'm very calm and composed, I'm relaxed, I think, I'm respectful, then I'm supposed to be called a man, right? Man is who is respectful, who is noble, he's got values, etc. He speaks to people like how he wants to be addressed, that he's a man. As Mu'tawi Sahib says, I boarded one train, you know. And the servant came to say to the boss, hey, that thing is charging. It's charging badly. So the boss says, just bring it. Now, Mu'tawi says, I'm wondering now what's going on here. So he brought a big dog, massive size, you know, 3/4 man size. Brought it. Some German, whatever it was, he brought it. So the boss took it and he tied, fastened it against one of those burglar guards. You know, in the Indian trains, you have those guards, so he fastened it up. Now, So this person began to speak to Maulana, and he says, you know what, this dog is such a friend of man, the best friend of man is a dog, but then why does the Sharia prohibit us from keeping a dog? So he says, you know, there are two reasons. Maulana says there are two reasons. One reason is a temporary relief for you, and one is a permanent solution. So which answer do you want? You want the one that is a temporary relief and temporary solution, or you want a permanent solution? He said, no, Maulana, I have both. The one that is a temporary solution, and the one that is a permanent solution. So he says the temporary solution is this, that the dog is very unsociable, very, very unsociable creature. And man in his nature, he wants to be sociable. Don't you want to be sociable? That thing is very unsociable. And the proof of its being unsociable is, you see one dog here, and it's eating something. Another dog comes, what happens? It's barking, it's charging. Hey, get away from here. Right? It moves it away. Sees another dog, he wants to bark at it, he wants to charge, he wants to bite the thing, he wants to do something. So in its very nature, it's very unsociable. When it's unsociable in its very nature, if that's going to be your companion, then those colors are going to rub onto you. You will also want to be unsociable. You will not be sociable, you will not be kind, you will not be considerate towards people. You will be very unsociable, you only think of yourself. Now look at the entire West, in which direction it's going. Is it going in a dog mentality or human mentality? Everybody just thinking for himself. Western country just for himself, or just for their own country. Our country must be right. We can grab and steal from anywhere, or from under any pretext, but we must be safe. However we do it, but we must be safe. Whatever we do. So the entire world is going in that direction, a dog mentality, right? So it's a very unsociable creature, therefore the Sharia says you must move it out. So, but that's a temporary solution. Must I give you a permanent solution as well? Say, Ya Mulana, must give me a permanent solution as well. So the permanent solution is that Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam has prohibited this. So, Mulana, you know, the first one really, really appeals to me. Really appeals to me. Whereas I can counter it. This type of a logical argument, I can counter it. Ordinary person like me, with such a simple and basic knowledge, I can counter that thing. And this person is saying, oh, that's a real solution. That's a real solution. But that solution that came from Hazrat Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam was not the solution for him. Right? It didn't bring a solution to him. So it's alright, but not, it's not a permanent thing. I can't understand. So what is he actually saying? He's saying this much, that for that thing to get a place in my heart, it must get the approval of my brain. What is he saying? For that thing to get a place in my heart, it needs to be approved by my brain. My brain can't approve it, then it doesn't get a place in my heart. So the mu'min's mind must be such, okay, by Nabi Sam has said it, he's consented this. So that is the right thing. This thing here, someone can counter it and you can break the argument. So when he's going to break the argument, your belief is going to be corrupt just now.